You're listening to Ten Radio on 105.3 FM, streaming on the web on tenradio.org.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Somerset, it's go!
Good afternoon and welcome to Somerset Is Go. And if you've never heard the name of the programme before, well, do keep your ears pinned open for this one. Somerset Is Go is basically about the recession. The recession has affected everybody, every business and everything in this area. And in Somerset Is Go, we're going to be looking at the recession, the causes of it, the effect of it on the community, the effect of it on businesses, and very importantly, the way that businesses and people in the community are dealing with it and moving forward. And so we'll be looking at the very positive side of the solutions to the recession's problems in this programme. The programme is very kindly funded by Taunton Deane Borough Council, where there are sponsors, and we hope to bring you aspects and in-depth interviews on many reasons why the recession has hit and what it is doing within the community. Now, with me in the studio today, I've got Eddie Gaines. We'll be presenting some of the programmes, along with Julian Mellor, Rob Bancroft, and of course Nigel Parkin. And over the next 26 weeks, we've got a lot of interesting things for you to listen to and to hear to and to react to, and we hope you will react to it. If there's anything on the programme that you think you want to tell us about or join in with, you can always ring in on 01984 624 137. And maybe you'd like to tell your story here on Somerset Is Go. Eddie, welcome to the Ten Radio studio once again. How do you feel about Somerset Is Go?
Oh, I think it's a brilliant concept, and I think Ten Radio as a community radio station is well placed to explore the whole concept of the recession and how it's impacting on people, you know, its background, where we are at now, and also help people along the way out of the recession, and that's individuals and businesses. The reason we're well placed is because we've got the advantage of being able to do whole hour programs, so we can actually explore particular subjects in quite some depth, and we've already got quite a few ideas for future programs. I mean, this is our first program, so in many respects we're launching this particular program to the 10 parishes and beyond, because the 10 Radio goes to Taunton, Wellington and quite a lot further.
Yes, indeed, reaches the parts other radio stations do not reach, as they say. Eddie, tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, I professionally worked with the unemployed for well over 30 years now, as first of all as an unemployment benefit office manager, and then a job centre manager. I've managed job centres in London, South Bristol, Tiverton, Minehead and Taunton, and although I don't work for Job Centre Plus, which is the government led organisation to help people back to work, for the last 3 years, the last 4 years that I was working for them, I actually managed large-scale redundancies on behalf of Job Centre Plus. Now, that's not making the staff redundant. It was if a company near a local job centre was closing or reducing their staff, then it was my job to help manage that redundancy on behalf of the employer, the workers, and indeed make things easier for the local job centres who often lacked the experience. I mean, when you've got a big company, say British Cellophane or Innova, as it was called at that time, closing with the loss of, say, 250 staff. I mean, that's a massive loss to the local economy. And, of course, suddenly you've got 250 people looking for a totally different job. Some people might need retraining. Some people might see it as, an opportunity to do something different in life. So, we can explore some of the situations that I got involved with, and that's going to be the basis of some of my input to some of these programs.
Well, you must have been on the front line, and so any effect the recession has must immediately have hit you in the job that you were doing.
Oh, most certainly. I've got examples where, not in this current recession. I mean, I've actually worked through, I think, three recessions now. So starting in the mid-80s and then in the early 90s. And, there is always going to be times where things get leaner, particularly from a business sense. And I think this is a very interesting recession because it's been led through the finances, really, and the whole the economy has proved to be quite fragile, actually. When business confidence is lacking, and actually, you would normally go to your bank manager, but it's actually the banks that have sort of let us down on this occasion.
I think there are two aspects of what you said that strike me. First of all, you said you've been through a couple of recessions before, and I think it's very important to realise that this isn't a one-off event. This is part of almost the natural cycle of things. I've seen these recessions as well as you, from a different angle. And the fact that I have seen things happen before, and I've come through them and I've come out the other end, makes me look at this one probably in context. It's very easy, if this is your first recession, to think that it's doom, gloom and everything else. But there are, in fact, ways out of it, and the natural order of things says that we will surface from it.
Yeah, and I think we will surface. And in fact, there are quite a lot of people saying that things are getting better. It's all right to say that, but if you're still sitting at home without a new job, then it's certainly not better for you personally. Or if you're a business and you're beginning to find that your customers are not coming through the door and you're failing to sell your goods, well, you're in a recession as far as you're concerned, and you've got to think, right, well, how am I going to find new customers? What's wrong with my product? Is it no longer required? I mean, quite a few years ago, I bought an old book of maps out of at a charity shop, I think, and I opened it up, and it's a beautiful little book, and out fell the British Rail map of 1911, and it was lines everywhere. And now, of course, that was fine for 1911, and indeed for most of the population up to about 1960, 61, 62, 63. And then suddenly, if you compare that old map with the map we've got now, you can see that the way people transport themselves around the country has indeed changed. And as people have got more cars and whatever, then the railways were less required. And so that's where technology has sort of changed the way that we do things. And of course, a lot of people say that computers would put people out of work. But that's not the case. But the point is, we do need computers, and we use computers all the time. But there's quite a lot of people who don't know how to use a computer. So it's a case of, do I need to reskill so that I can actually use those computers? And I say that's another aspect of how a recessionary situation will actually encourage people to get new skills.
And thinking again of something you said, you were talking about the change in the way people travelled in the 1960s, and I must admit, being of extremely advanced years, I remember all this. And I'm going to take as an example the British motorcycle industry. When you looked in the 1940s and 50s, the British motorcycle industry was the envy of the world. But the primary market for motorcycles was for daily transport to work and back and all the rest of it. Now, what they didn't notice was that as the 50s went through and people moved into the 60s, people became slightly more affluent, and people were buying motorcycles for recreational purposes. And what you actually needed in a machine was completely different from what you might have needed to carry the family around with a sidecar. And somehow British industry missed this. And the Japanese saw the market, developed the machines, and took the market over completely. And this, I think, is an example of an industry not reskilling and not changing its attitudes in time. It had the blinkered approach, I think, at the time. This is something that we've all got to guard against.
That's right. And in previous recessions, you know, as you know, jobs have been created. I mean, you obviously had in the mid 80s, the closure of mines because you know British coal wasn't profitable and that sort of thing. And then they created a lot of like shopping centres, and so a lot of people went into the service sector, retail. Now, of course, you know, this current recession, we've seen a lot of high street retailers go to the wall quite quickly. I mean, Woolworths, for example, Zavvi, which used to be Virgin Records, for example, just. Two companies that would think there's always people going into Woolworths, there's always people going into Zavvi, but unfortunately you've also got a lot of people buying things on the internet now.
Yeah, that was something I was going to come to a little bit later on. But I think perhaps the difference in this recession to the ones that have gone before is that I've seen more very major companies fold. There were companies that folded in this recession that I would never have thought would have gone to the wall.
Well, that's right, and the whole thing is no one can be shielded from this sort of thing. I mean, if your product is no longer fashionable or available, then you can't sell it to somebody, and that your whole supply of cash falls. Unfortunately, we had a very great builder here which actually started in Wiveliscombe, the Gads Company. Now they had they build very good homes, or they were building very good homes. They had a very good order book, and they had some good contracts. But it got to a point where you're putting money into big investments. But if you're not actually selling any houses, then that money's going to dry up. And whilst there's probably a bigger picture there, I mean, all recessions seem to start with the building trade, with people no longer being able to sell their houses or builders. It's one of those industries where if your labourers don't get paid or whatever, your cash flow immediately dries up, and the building trade is always a very good barometer of the economy. I mean, quite a few years ago, I worked in London. I was the job centre manager at Kensington High Street, and I said to my immediate line manager that I said, I think there's a recession coming to the London area, and he said, well, why are you saying that, Eddie? Because this is a London labour market, there will always be jobs in London. I said, well, I've noticed walking around Kensington High Street, and I've noticed that the local council isn't painting their lampposts as often as they do, because they were always getting civic visitors. They were coming to Buckingham Palace, so they'd be continually keeping the lampposts, in their sort of like gold and black colour. And I said, I rang up the local, Kensington and Chelsea council, and I said, well, why aren't you painting a lamppost or something? He said, oh, we haven't got money for that anymore. And whilst we would do it every year, we now do it every 3 years. And said, so money's tight then. He said, oh, yeah, it is very tight. And now, see, Kensington and Chelsea is the richest borough in England, if not Europe. Now, I said this to my immediate. I saw other things. Employment agencies closing down on Kensington High Street. And I know when they put the job centre in Kensington High Street, all the employment agents said, oh, you won't be there for long, we've got all the business, but Kensington High Street job centre was still there, and yet the little employment agencies were closing down because people weren't taking on staff anymore. That senior manager apologised to me 2 years later when we were in the midst of the recession in London. He said, I should have listened to you, Eddie, because you actually saw very small signs, but you interpreted it as a recession in waiting.
I think that it's important to see these small signs. It's important not just to look at the bigger picture, but to see the tiny things that happen around the edge, because often we'll get 12 months, 18 months warning of what's about to happen. This is certainly true in the retail trade that I've been in. You get undertones, one thing and another. But I think before we go into my background, we better hear about Julian Meller, because Julian, of course, is going to be another presenter on this programme. He too has a few things to say about Somerset Is Go.
Well, hello, Philip, and hello to all the listeners. This is Julian Meller, and I'm sorry I can't be with you today, but my work commitments mean that I have to be elsewhere. But I just wanted to say a bit about the Somerset Is Go programme and what I think it should be doing and what I hope for it. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the chair of Ten Radio and I'm also the part-time station manager. My background is as a charter surveyor and then a planner working for Bristol City Council. And I then went on to work for a number of years in economic development in the city. And more recently have had my own consultancy working in the fields of economic development and community development in the southwest of England. So it was really with that sort of background that I came into the idea of this programme. And I think the issue for us obviously goes back to the beginning of the recession with the collapse of Northern Rock and Lehman Brothers. But while we were obviously aware of the impact of the recession elsewhere in the country, it did rather feel that Somerset was perhaps a bit more insulated, maybe isolated from the real impact of the economic decline that we heard about so much in the rest of the country. And maybe that was because of the lack of any really big industries and big business in the southwest and in Somerset. Maybe it was because there's so many more people who are self-employed or in small businesses. We didn't really have the feeling that the impact was quite as great. But whether that is going to remain the case is obviously open to question, and obviously there has been some impact. And what we really wanted to do with this programme was to have the opportunity to find out in much more depth about what the recession is meaning for businesses and people here in Somerset. So we want to go out and talk to businesses about what it's meant for them, whether they've had to lay people off, what it's meant for exporters, what it's meant for people importing goods and services from elsewhere, and what those businesses are doing as strategies to survive and to see them through the bad times. But it's not just about businesses, it's also about not-for-profit organisations that are providing valuable services. Obviously, things impact upon them. It might be because they are reliant on donations and their donors are cutting back. It might be because they have large investments and that generates their income, but the interest rates are coming right down, so their income sources have dried up. There's a number of ways in which the recession is impacting upon them. And for others, it might be that they rely on grants from local government or national government, and obviously that has been cut back as well. And then, of course, there's just the people, the employees, the stories that they have. And we hope that we will hear more from individual people about how the recession has impacted upon them and what they are doing and their experiences of that. So that was really the idea of this programme. And we were very fortunate that we were able to secure funding from Taunton Deane Borough Council for 6 months to be able to run this programme and engage with people and businesses in the Taunton Deane area to work on the recession and the issues. So what am I going to be doing? Well, my areas of interest are in what is known as social enterprise. So that is the not-for-profit sector, where organisations are trading and trying to be profitable. So that includes, for example, Ten Radio. We are a limited company. We are owned by the community. We hope to make a profit, but that profit is always reinvested in the company and not distributed to private owners of the company or to shareholders. So there are many, many businesses in the area like us, and it will be interesting to find out more about what they're doing, how the recession has impacted on them, and how they see the future. I'll also be looking for green businesses to go and talk to them to find out about what the recession's meant for them. And I think that will be particularly interesting in the current context of climate change and a greening of the economy as a whole. Obviously some enormous opportunities for some types of businesses, but a big challenge for other businesses. But I think my first programme, which will be at the end of March, will be staying close to home around Wiveliscombe and talking to food and drink businesses, whether they're retailers, wholesalers, caterers, to find out what the recession has meant for them and how they're dealing with it. So I think just a final word that if you're a listener and you are a business and you'd like us to come and talk to you, then do please get in touch. Or if you have program ideas about what we should be covering, then let us know that. Or even if you just have tips for survival, either as a business or as an individual, then do please get in touch with us. You can reach me. My email address is julian@tenradio.org, or you can call us at the studio, which is 01984 624 137, and messages will get through to me. So I think, Philip, that is all from me. I will hand you back control. Good luck with the rest of the programme, and I will look forward to doing my slot at the end of March.
Thank you very much indeed, Julian.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as Ten Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
And you're listening to Somerset Is Go. It's the new programme from 5 until 6 on a Wednesday afternoon, all about the recession, how people are dealing with it, what effects it has on the community, and what you can do to help yourself get through these rather difficult times. I've got Eddie Gaines on my left here in the studio, and Eddie, I'm going to go back to you. Are there any particular topics you think we ought to know about in these programmes?
Well, obviously, the way we're seeing that the programme, as Julian says, and we're looking at how the recession has impacted on the individual. What was the personal impact? Have you recently been made redundant, or have you? Are you in a particular job where you think, right, well, this is, I'm not going anywhere, and I want to get a better job for myself. Is this the time to take stock in my life? Do I need to be coached in what is the best step for me? Do I change direction? Or am I forced to change direction because the job that I was doing no longer exists in that local area? If you look at what the press is saying or the media, well, there's a recession about, so obviously jobs are going to be very short. Well, if that's the case, where are the new jobs coming from, for example? We spoke earlier about the miners, the decline of the mining industry. Well, that created a situation where a lot of people went into service type jobs and or retail type jobs, and in the mid 90s, where you had a lot of manufacturing companies going, but you then had a lot of distribution companies springing up, so a lot of people had to learn how to drive a forklift, for example, in a big warehouse, and etc. So things like learning to drive a forklift or even driving a coach or a lorry, for example. I mean, we still transport most of our goods around this country by lorry, and so, you know, people need to train to drive a lorry, for example.
And so what was a part of your job, finding out the skills and abilities that people possessed and then maximising their abilities and steering them in the direction where those abilities could be best used?
That's right, yes. I mean, training can be quite time-consuming. I know quite a few years ago there was a lot of press about plumbers earning an awful lot of money, and indeed they do earn a lot of money, but it takes about 3 to 4 years to train as a plumber, and that's if you've got someone to be an apprentice to, because yes, you can go to college and you can learn how to weld two pipes together and do all that sort of thing, but you still need the practical experience to put what you've learnt into place. And I mean, if you're going to be working with gas, you need qualifications and accreditation to say you can work with gas appliances, and there are all sorts of different levels of skills required. Are you talking about domestic gas, or are you talking about industrial gas and that sort of thing? So someone who thinks, right, well, I've lost my job and I'm going to become a plumber next week, it's just not going to happen. Or if it does happen, well, how am I going to support myself for the period that I'm at college training?
Yes, reskilling is a very, very good idea, but as you say, it isn't instant. I mean, what advice would you have given to a family that had an immediate financial need? I mean, how could they possibly cope with the fact that one of their members of the family had lost their job?
Well, obviously, you've got to look at what their regular outgoings are, basically, we're talking about debt management. If they've tied themselves into hire purchase agreements, that they may have a mortgage, they might have paying rent to either the council or even a private landlord. So they've got to think about, right, well, I've now, you know, those are my regular outgoings, but I've only got, say, Job Seekers Allowance coming in. And those two things will never, ever tie up. If someone claims Job Seekers Allowance, for example, you're not entitled to any help with your mortgage until 9 months have elapsed. Yeah, which is an awful long time. So you've still got to pay your mortgage for 9 months. And quite a lot of people, when they take mortgages out, they don't take any insurance about being sick or unemployed. I mean, some do, but an awful lot of people think, well, that's a bit of a saving. You know, I'm not going to pay the extra, whatever it is, £20 a month for that, because I'm in a secure job. There is no such thing as a secure job. And this is something that I've learnt, as a job centre manager. There is no security, unfortunately.
I think this is one of the biggest changes that I've seen in my lifetime. I was born, dare I admit it, in 1948, and people, when they got a job sort of in the early 50s, mid-50s, often thought they'd got a job for life, and sometimes, you know, their families would follow them into the trade that they happen to have. These days, that doesn't exist. It's completely fragmented these days.
That's right. I think it's accepted that in one's working lifetime, one may have anything between 10 and 20 different jobs of varying lengths. I mean, I've been quite lucky. I worked as a unemployment benefit office manager and a job centre manager, but I started at the bottom, really, just signing people on. I was a casual for Christmas in 1976, and I seemed to take to the job very well, and it was work that interested me, and I could see that I was actually helping people, and I think there's part of me that wants to help people, and I think that came through, and so I sort of rotated through the ranks, so to speak. I learnt a lot, an awful lot of different skills. I was a training officer for about 3 years in the early 80s, and then moved into a sort of like deputy manager of an unemployment benefit office, a large unemployment benefit office in London, and then eventually got promoted to being a manager. And but funnily enough, I went from being an unemployment benefit office person to a job centre manager, because I had an immediate manager who thought, right, well, that would be good development for you, Ed. You know, I know you've learned benefits and that sort of thing, but I want to use those skills in a job centre context. And I actually found it quite a challenge, but also quite rewarding to do something totally different with my managerial skills.
Thinking back, you were talking about British Cellophane in Bridgewater when they closed down, and there were many, many jobs there. And we have to remember that it's not just a job that's gone, it's a family that's affected. And so if you 250 workers lose their jobs, you've got 1,000 people involved immediately. And this reflects back down through the community.
Oh, that's right, yeah, and indeed at British Cellophane, I think the average time that someone was working there was about 26 years, and in fact the HR manager actually lives here in the Ten Parishes in Milverton. Now, he was being made redundant as well. It was the closure of the whole company for sort of economic reasons. It was owned by an American company, and the American company favoured the company in America to keep that going. And I suppose it's like distance management. You know, they're over there, but we've got you know, our own American people to look after. And and although British Cellophane was quite a profitable factory, it was in fact closed down. However, the personnel manager, I was walking across the car park with him during that time, and he said to me, well, you know, look at this car park, it is empty. There are only about 80 to 100 cars in this car park, where 8 or 9 years ago it was full. And so there's been a gradual reduction in staffing in this location for many, many years, and that can be quite soul destroying and demotivating for the workforce that was there. And yes, you know, a redundancy situation is a horrible situation for everyone, you know, employers, union officials, you know, the personnel managers that have got to actually work through it, all the people who are trying to help the workers, you know, at that situation. And it's one of those situations where everything is out of your particular control. And I've learned that stress comes from situations where you've got no control over the situation. However, I mean, I arranged some retraining for quite a lot of staff, and because that was government money, I had to follow up to the staff to see, you know, maybe 3 months later what they were doing. And I had one conversation with the wife of one of the workers, and I think he was one of the supervisors and whatever. And I rang him up, but I spoke to her, and she said, oh no, he's out at work now. And she said, but do you know, Mr. Gaines, he now actually, he enjoys his work. He enjoys what he's doing. This is something that he'd wanted to do for many, many years. But because he was locked into, you know, earning a wage, etc., he didn't want to take the risk of breaking with his current job. But actually, what the redundancy has done, it's actually created a situation where he's been forced to do something differently, but he's chosen the right course for him. And he actually he gets up and he's immediately out. And he was working as a painter decorator for himself.
Well, yes, I mean, that would immediately mean that he was in control of his own life, and therefore the pressures that arose from other situations where he wasn't in control probably didn't exist, provided he could keep what he was doing, you know, within a fairly strict framework.
That's right, and that's another aspect that, you know, if you've lost your job, I mean, there is a lot of pressure on you. You've got the economic pressures. You've got whatever situation, your family situation to worry about, and quite a lot of people just jump in, you know, at the first job that's offered to them, where a lot of people have been made redundant, quite a lot of companies start sniffing around there for staff, and they will take on the workers quite quickly, but often it's not the right job for that worker. Because they've gone from a situation where you know, they were doing work that they were comfortable with, work they knew, and suddenly it's a completely different ball game. And I had quite a few workers coming back to me and saying, "I think I've made a mistake. You know, what did you say about retraining, Eddie? You know, can you still get me on a retraining course? Because, you know, yes, I took that job, but I think I've made a big mistake, and I'm just not happy in my new job." And so, you know, it's very easy just to jump at the first job that's offered. And I think hopefully in these programs we'll talk about, you know, really finding the right job for you, because, you know, working for something, you're giving up your time, your energy, obviously for money and that sort of thing, but also there's I think there's often, you know, it's what pleasure do you get in doing that job? You know, are you going to wake up in the morning thinking, yeah, great, you know, I'm going there and I'm doing work that I want to enjoy? Now, Philip, we've not talked about you. I mean, you've been doing, you know, you've been working, doing things that you've really enjoyed most of your working life, haven't you?
Well, I don't really fit into any categories, and I'm a strange kind of character anyway, basically. My background, up until 1980, was in the broadcast industry, doing various things from engineering on transmitters to recordings and goodness knows what else. And I had a period abroad in 78 to 80. I was working in Latin America, again with radio stations. And I came back to England, and I looked around, and I didn't really feel comfortable in any of the categories that I might otherwise have fitted in. And so what I actually did was invent a job for myself. I went into business doing something that I enjoyed doing. When I initially started, I wasn't able to focus 100% on the aspect of the business that I wanted to do. It had to be built up. It had to earn its living, first of all. I ended up buying and selling and restoring vintage technology radios, gramophones, all these sort of strange things. It's an odd job. But after about 5 years, now I initially started repairing anything and everything, which you have to do in order to get yourself established. After about 5 years, I found that I could do the direction in which the business was going, I was finally able to do, and it sort of worked. And so, although I was under great stress, because there were times when you really were overloaded with work and things had to be done and you were working till 4 a.m, I think what was important for me is that I had control of my environment. Yes, these pressures were there, but because it sort of stood or fell on my own shoulders, I was actually deciding my own destiny. And even when under pressure, that does help you to take the pressure. You know, if somebody else is deciding your destiny,
I know, you're just one of those guys who can't say no, can you? Because I was one of your customers, and that was, in fact, when I first met you, I'd bought an old jukebox, and the chap I bought it from said, "Oh, we'll have to get the amplifier service first of all." And he took me along to your little workshop, and with this little amplifier, I said, "Well, you know, here's the amplifier for this jukebox. Can you please service it?" So that's actually when I first met you. And I do know that you had a lot of customers who regularly came back to you, etc. And so
I think you've hit on a couple of things here. Now, first of all, by inventing a business that was different, I wasn't reliant on trade from the immediate area of the town. My trade came nationally. I had to build up my name for what I did. But when I was, you know, successful after 5, 6, 7 years, the name got around, and I found that my trade came nationally rather than locally. And by the time, the shop and the business ran for nearly 30 years, I've now moved on into something else. But within that 30 years, I would think that by the end of it, 60 or 70% business was return business at least. You know, from people who 20 years ago had something done and they'd come back again, or their sons or daughters would come back. And that was the sort of thing I did. It was a niche market, and purely and simply because it was a bit strange, it didn't tend to go up and down with the various recessions that we've talked about over the last 30 years. But that, I suppose, was my strategy for dealing with problems, was to invent something that was rather unusual, and therefore there wasn't a great deal of competition, and it was the sort of thing that was usually a background level of trade for anyway. Things have changed, but I'll probably come into that just
now,
a touch later on.
Talking about things unusual, now we've got a recorded interview in a couple of minutes, if not sooner, and this is with one of our businesses here in the Wiveliscombe area, Ten the Square. It's an Italian restaurant bistro just behind the Ten Radio Studios. And earlier this week on another program, I did an interview with Sally Edwards, the proprietor of Ten the Square, and Ellie Blaker. And rather than sort of like reducing their business or whatever, they're actually expanding the business, and they're making more use of the space that's available to them at their location, and they are now in a process of starting up a new aspect of their business. And I know Sally Edwards is very highly respected by a lot of people here in the Wiveliscombe area, people in the Taunton area. I mean, she's opened restaurants in Taunton, you know, the old Dragon Bookshop. She I believe started that as a restaurant. Also, I think she had something to do with the Flying Aubergine in Taunton. And I know there are a lot of people in Taunton who want her to go back to Taunton, but she's ours here in Wiveliscombe. And if we can sort of listen to just this interview that I did earlier this week on one of the breakfast shows, on the Manic Monday show. And this is Sally Edwards and Ellie Blaker talking about the new business venture. Well, that was Man for Man with Mike Darbo in the lead singing position after he took over from Paul Jones. And anyway, happy birthday, Mike Darbo. You are only
66 today. 66 years
happy
young.
Happy birthday, just to remind you, yes. And
might have been a secret that we might have upset him now, you never know.
Yeah. And welcome into the Ten Razor. We've got Sally Edwards and Ellie Blaker.
Hello.
Hi, good morning to you both. Yeah. Hi, how are you both?
Very well, thank you.
Good, thank you.
First of all, big thank you for supporting the Manic Monday for so long, Sally. It's been wonderful having a local business support this particular show and Ten Radio in general. It's we've put your money to good use, as you can see. Yeah. Yes, and I mean, I was in Ten Square over the weekend, and you've got lots of good things happening. But you're sort of extending your area, aren't you?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Basically, we're sort of making the cafe area bigger, which it'll be a separate area from upstairs, with a different sort of feel. There's going to be a big table in there so that you can have groups, or you can all sit together sort of communally sitting, which is quite a nice idea. So that's through from the kitchen as it is into the house, so that now the whole of the downstairs of the house will sort of flow through so that you can walk around everywhere. And there'll be a proper sitting room area for people to just have coffee and things, so with sofas and sort of soft seating and read papers and things like that. So that's sort of what's happening downstairs. And then upstairs we're going to reinstate sort of bed and breakfast in the one really lovely sort of big room. And then the other area on the first floor is going to become a beauty treatment area, which is where Ella comes in.
Natural therapies and waxing, if you ever need any. And we're going to be doing massages. We're going to have professional massages coming in and offering different types of massage, like Indian head massage, sports massage in specific, Swedish massage. There's also going to be therapies like a sort of nail bar room area. There's two small therapy rooms and then a beautiful bathroom as well. So it's going to be Gardner Edwards with a hint of Balinese spa, hopefully.
Do you know, that's we'll never aim. Leave. We'll never leave.
That is the whole. That is the idea. They can come and spend a whole day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, is Wiverliscombe such a stressful place then to live in, do you think?
Not now. Not anymore.
I think it's partly the fact that I think a lot of people, having talked to a lot of people, that the idea of having to go into Taunton is to go and have your whatever treatment you're going to have, a relaxing massage, to have to drive there, have it, and then get stressed driving home again is sort of...
And does it all,
it,
really?
It's what it does. So the idea that you can actually not have to drive into Taunton and things is, I think, is quite appealing.
Yeah.
And then you can obviously have coffee and lunch and afterwards and...
And
that sort of thing. And
before,
and before,
the whole lot.
Be completely relaxed.
And then stay the night as well.
And then stay the night. So
it's a complete package,
you know,
isn't it?
It is.
It's going to be like that hotel in New York where people actually just move in and live there.
Oh, the Chelsea Hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wiverliscombe's Chelsea Hotel.
And will people have to pre-book, or obviously the treatments and that sort of thing?
That'll have to be an appointment system and that sort of thing. Yes, on the opening day we're going to be giving out leaflets with all the information, price lists and times that we're going to be open and things like that. So it's going to be quite flexible with people being able to phone up, book therapies, and if there's someone available, you know, it's more than one person doing different things, so they'll be able to book in that way. But yeah, if they can just come in and have a browse around, and if there happens to be space then as well, and they're having lunch, they can have a treatment then as well.
Fantastic.
So our grand sort of opening is the 14th of March, which is happens to be Mother's Day. We just thought it would be a nice thing. We're going to do a special lunch that day, two courses, £15, obviously with an Italian feel to it. And then people are welcome to sort of wander around what we've done and see it, and have a free mini treatment just to get a taste of what we're doing. Hopefully it'll be a nice day. That's sort of 10 till 3 as our normal open time, so you can just come and have a coffee in the morning and have a look round if you want, or bring your mother or bring some friends, or
treat yourself
yeah, why not? And obviously, Eddie, this is not just going to be for women. We are going to offer treatments for men.
Facials for men, yeah.
Have to have a shave first.
Manicures.
Have to have a shave first.
Yes. There's going to be things like reflexology and things like that as well. And Indian head massage, obviously, men might go for things like that as well. Leg waxes, I don't know.
Manicures. Some men do, don't they? They do hair off.
Yes.
If you're a keen cyclist, you know where to come.
And the manicures will be good for guys as well. You know, if you're a builder and you've got chapped hands, you know, extra moisturising and hot oil treatments on the hands.
You would know a little bit about that, wouldn't you?
Yes. Yeah. I think Frank's booked in already, for a manicure. He has no choice. It should be a very relaxing atmosphere.
Of course, Frank won't need the haircut, though, will he?
No, he won't, but he might need his legs waxed, so...
I just think it's all very, very splendid, and I mean, Sally, you've invested a lot of your time, energy, money, and in Wiverliscombe, and you're building up such a great business, and I know you've got fans all over the southwest. People come far and
they
wide.
They do come a long way, yeah, which is nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's. I mean, I just think it's good for generally for Wiverliscombe, obviously, because the more people that come in, it's better for everybody, really. It's quite a long way off, but we're all, Gardner Edwards on Tenner Square is going to be involved in the Taunton Flower Show this year, which is quite exciting as well. So we're going to have a sort of stand there, and I'm doing a show garden, hopefully. So that's quite scary, quite exciting. So yeah, which is another thing we're sort of planning for this year. Mm. So. And obviously we want to do, just thinking ahead as well, is that, which we'll talk about maybe, that, because I think you maybe came, I don't know if you came to the one last year where we did a bull thing. I don't think you did.
Oh, yes.
We had a sort of Milverton Wiverliscombe. Yeah, so we're going to try and get a sort of... Yeah. regular league sort of going this year and have a sort
this
of regular...
This is the French game of balls.
Yeah, yeah. Ball. So sort of using the sort of lovely garden space. So.
In the sunshine.
Yeah.
So that's nice views, beautiful views.
Yeah. So there are all sorts of things that are going to be happening, so it's exciting. Mm.
And of course, Ellie, you've sort of like a recent addition to Sally's.
Yes. I started
empire.
By painting it. So yes. But this is what I've always wanted to do. So it is more my thing, really. But I really enjoy working there, and hopefully it will get bigger and better and more relaxing for everyone.
Again, you've created quite a few niche jobs, haven't you, really?
Yeah.
And I think it's great that with Liscombe, it's not only yourself. There are other businesses and restaurants in the local area, and you all seem to be doing pretty well.
Mm.
And it just shows that despite all the hype about the recession, etc. I mean, I'm no doubt things are, money is tighter.
You know, it's definitely been, and I think this winter has been quite hard because of the weather and things like that, which play quite a big factor. But I think if you stick to, if you're quite reasonably small, which we are, and you stick to, the quality that you're offering, and you don't try and, lower your standards, I think you'll see it through, hopefully.
All right, well, anyway, lovely. Thank you very much
for
coming in.
Thank you.
So the 14th of March is when it's launched.
Yep. If anybody wants to come in between now and then and have a look round, we're quite happy to show people, see what's going on.
And have you got a contact telephone number if anyone wanted to ring you up
about
this?
So it's 01984-629-128.
Well, I think that's a cue for a song, and this is Billy Joel and Scenes from an Italian Restaurant.
A bottle of white, a bottle of red, perhaps a bottle of rosé instead. Get a table near the street in our old familiar place, you and I face to face.
And Sally Edwards there telling us all about her plans to beat the recession. One of the things she said was about quality, Eddie, and I think one of the weapons in the war against recession on the high street is to up your quality, isn't it?
That's right, and I think Sally was dead right. If you compromise on what you're doing, then you're going to lose something of the shape of your business. And I noticed Cotley Brewery, one of our breweries, has actually been awarded 5 stars. And that's an organisation, an employer that is doing pretty well. But I've been speaking with Fred Domoloff and Steve from Cotley Brewery, and they're looking for new markets for their beer. And they're talking about linking up with a brewery in Germany, for example, and are already exporting some of their beer to America. Now, there's no bigger market than America. So at the moment it's going into Chicago, I think. They've got a distributor in Chicago. So we'll be talking to Cotley Brewery, for example, on how they are weathering the storm of this particular recession in some later programmes. And of course, their beer isn't going to get worse. In fact, they're realising they're competing with some other fine beer makers in the local area, and so they can't compromise on their quality, can they? And of course, Taunton Deane have just awarded them 5 stars, which is excellent in a sort of like a food standards assessment that they recently had.
I think 5 stars is a wonderful achievement. Thinking back to quality again, I mean, looking at a small town like Wellington, I look up and down the high street now, we do have a number of empty shops, and I've seen it all before, and it comes, as I say, comes and goes in waves. But the great advantage of a small town like Wibberliscombe or Wellington, there are two things that the small businesses can offer. One is a personal service at a level that you just cannot get in many other organisations, coupled with the knowledge of what is sold. And the second is the quality. Because you're in a small business, you've got total control of the quality of what you do. And that degree of service, the personal service, and the high level of quality that often goes with a small business in a rural community like Wivelliscombe or Wellington can actually help to swing the balance on the way to success in no uncertain terms.
That's right, and here in Wivelliscombe we've got some of the finest traders and retailers in Somerset, if not the UK. I mean, we've got Thorne's Butcher Shop, for example, that is voted one of the best butcher shops in the whole world by an industry magazine, for example. And that was an accolade that was given to them by their customers, which is, you know, also very important. One mustn't forget the customer. We've got the courthouse, which sells all sorts of gifts and carpets and rugs and that sort of thing. We've got the gun shop, which is well utilised by people who are in the shooting and field sports fraternity. We've got the larder, which again is an excellent shop. We've got a hardware shop, which I never fail to be amazed as actually what they've got in there. We've got a great post office, for example, which will just bend over backwards to help you. It just goes, you know, the list is endless. And every morning when I come up to the studio, I see all the paper boys going out and about delivering papers from Thorne's newsagent. And, of course, we've got two very competitive supermarkets here in Wivelliscombe. A great place. I now call it the independent state of Wivelliscombe.
The independent state of, well, I come from the independent state of Wellington, so hopefully we could be friends.
That's right.
The thing, of course, that comes from all this, we're talking about quality, we're talking about standards of service, and the thing that backs all this off is the unbelievable depth of knowledge that the people we are dealing with have about the products they're selling or the services they're offering. They're not just people who are selling or telling you about something, they are people who know in the greatest degree of detail all about what they're doing.
That's right. And the point is, you know, if a business survives and indeed grows, then they're going to want to take on new staff. And there's been some surveys only in the last week or so where vacancy numbers are set to improve. Quite a lot of small businesses, larger businesses are saying that, yeah, that they intend to take on staff in the near future. But the counter side of that is there's also been a survey, and about 16 million people in this country don't expect a pay rise in 2010. Well, so I find it's quite amazing, because I think everyone's got pressure on them, heating costs are going up, use of electricity, gas, water and whatever. A lot of companies aren't putting their prices down. There will be people who may want to change their cars and all that sort of thing. And, you know, the scrappage scheme is coming to an end in the very near future. So it's amazing that actually 16 million people are actually saying, I don't expect a pay rise this year, which I find incredible.
Yes, it does show how hard things are hitting. But as I say, we have been talking about the positive side and some of the positive things that can be done in order to keep your head above water in this recession period. I'm looking at the clock. We've very nearly come to the end of the programme. So have you got a few final words, Eddie?
Well, yes, do listen in every week between 5 and 6 o'clock on a Wednesday evening. The show is going to be repeated. We've got to fit it into our schedule. We haven't quite got to the day in which it's going to repeat it and the time. But if you're travelling home from work or even, you know, from being out, why not put it on your car radio? If you want to get involved in our program, if you're a business or an individual and you'd like to get involved in our in these programs or helping to put these programs together, we're only too willing to have you get on board. You can contact us at 10 Radio on 01984 624 137, or send an email to julian@10radio.org. Next week, I think we'll be looking at how to get a job, you know, how to fill in a CV or what to put on your CV, for example. And that's going to be a bit of a bit from a previous program.
Well, I can hear the Thunderbirds March coming up in the background for Somerset Is Go. It's time for us to leave you this week. Do stay tuned to 10 Radio. Lots of good programs to come. And join us again for Somerset Is Go next Wednesday afternoon, 5 o'clock. See you there. You're listening to 10 Radio on 105.3, streaming on the web at 10radio.org. You can contact us on 01984 624 137.